broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears coming at you live here on a Thursday morning, beautiful Thursday morning here in Marion. 62 degrees and mostly sunny skies, 17 minutes past the hour on this August. I about said June there. How about that? I'm 2 months behind. August 25th, 2022. It's going to be a great morning here on WWGH Radio. I'll kick it off until 10 a.m. this morning, and then we'll have Voice of the People with Linda Sims from 10 a.m. until 12 noon. And then today, naturalist James Anderson will be the guest of Adam the Computer Guy from 12:15 until 1 p.m. So don't miss any of the live great talk programming today on WWGH Radio. For the first hour, I'm joined by a gentleman who will be headed to Marion, Ohio this coming Friday, tomorrow. How about that? I'm all wrong with dates this morning. I don't know what's going on. Saturday, August the 27th at 7:30 p.m., the Marion Palace Theater will be graced by a great comedian. I'm hearing all kinds of good stuff about him, Steve Bruner. There are still tickets available, 740-387-3425. What a pleasure it is to welcome to our microphones from the West Coast, where it's about 5 a.m. in the morning, Steve Bruner. Steve, how are you?
Hey, Scott, I'm doing well. I am doing well. Thanks for the... Hey, my voice actually works at 5:15 in the morning my time. So thanks a lot. I appreciate that.
But don't ask me to remember your birthday or any other dates this morning, because I'm getting them all wrong this morning.
No problem. Saturday, I'm going to be there on Friday. I'm flying this evening. So you weren't lying to the people. I'm just doing the show on Saturday. Well, so no worry.
Maybe we'll hit a few spots tomorrow night.
There you go. Okay. Well, as long as they're not at 5:15 in the morning, that'll be fine.
That'll sound good.
I might need to sleep in. Who knows?
Steve, we're all excited for you to come to Marion here. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
What can people expect Saturday night?
Well, I've been doing comedy for a real long time, and it's going to be some fun material with a fantastic juggler extraordinaire in the front spot, Mike Price, and I'm an observational comic that makes jokes about everyday things and not any offensive material. I'm not going to be picking political sides and no arguments I'm going to settle or anything like that. I just kind of have an easy disposition on life and share it in a funny way.
You know, I was reading some articles on you, Steve, last night, and it is kind of interesting that one of your hallmarks has become non-offensive material. How did you make that decision in a world where 99% of comedians pretty much are doing that now?
Well, I don't know. I guess this is the kind of humor that seemed to come to me. I grew up in a kind of a fun family that didn't have any troubles. My dad I never heard him say a swear word, I think, until I was maybe 16, and I think he swore once at me and said, well, sorry about that. So whenever I heard a joke, I just thought, well, is that a necessary part? And I don't know. How does somebody decide to cook Cajun? It's just the way they do it. And I'm sure if you look hard enough, you can find offense in everything. But I pretty much poke fun at myself and the world around me and trying to speak a little truth to myself. And I'm just a human being that does things wrong every now and again and try to point it out to other people. So as long as I'm not offended, I figure everybody else isn't.
You know, Steve, we've had a lot of great comedians on the program. We've had Joy Behar and Bill Cosby. How about that name? Bill Cosby and Marty Allen, Shecky Green, all kinds of great people.
Hi.
Gallagher. And they've all said that when it comes to language, a lot of comedians now, younger comedians, use the profanity to be the joke. It's the punchline. It's what gets the laugh. And it's much harder to use language and get the joke. Have you found that to be true?
Well, I know that probably everybody listening isn't a prude. They've heard the language and all that kind of stuff. I know that if a joke needs it to get the laugh, it probably can be written as a better joke. But I know that there's a shock value to it, and people are like, "Oh, hey, wow, they're doing some piece of material that they want." I just don't want to be shocked when I hear humor, but I'm not judgy on how somebody else does something. It's just not in my bailiwick, and I found that I got employed pretty early in the comedy thing for a couple corporate events because they didn't want to hear the language, and there's show and then there's business, and the business is the bigger word, and I wanted to make a living in comedy, so I kind of went that route, and it helped me out, and plus that's kind of how I think. So I don't know if other comics need it or they do it. I don't know if it's lazy. I haven't heard a lot of profanity that's actually the punchline too much in a show. They just kind of add it as a little sparkler to the firework, and sometimes the joke is big enough, and it's just the way I do it. I don't really know how to avoid. Boy, I wish I had a good answer for what other people do. I just know how I do it. I so far don't seem to need it. So that's worked out for me.
Before we move to the why you don't do political humor, on the language side of it, if a joke came to you and for some reason the punchline involved some profanity or the joke needed profanity to make sense, if it was a funny joke, would you use it?
Well, I don't think, one, there's a whole bunch of words that mean the same thing as profanity that are a little more clever. So I might try to use some of those. And, of course, hey, I've played golf, so I know what the words are. I kind of write a joke so that, I remember when I started out, I kind of wrote a joke so that if my folks came to see the show or my grandmother, that they wouldn't say anything to me afterwards, and that seemed to be a good rule of thumb to follow. And to answer your question, gosh, I've been told to swear on stage. I think I did it twice for part of the contract that they wanted it to be an adult show, and I wasn't adult enough in the material that I sent them, and I added a word that I thought was a clever use of that, and it just tasted wrong in my mouth, so I haven't done it too many times.
No, that's
that didn't sound like a great answer. Sorry.
No. That's.
I need more coffee.
No, that's a little behind the curtain there, because that's interesting. Something that most of us would not realize, that there are some people who own clubs or theaters who would say, "Hey, it's an adult show. You've got to add profanity." How does that conversation happen?
They just saw a tape, and some people were saying, "Hey, we don't want the tame stuff for the late night show, and we'd appreciate." So I remember going up front with one joke. "Hey, I was told to do this. Here's my contractual obligation. Here's the joke." Everybody laughed. Hope everybody's happy with that, and let's move on with what I usually do. And I think the way I got a big bunch of work on cruises was somebody saw me in Las Vegas at a midnight show, and they couldn't believe I didn't swear at a midnight Las Vegas show, and came back and said, "Hey, if you don't swear at a midnight show, you could probably do cruises where they kind of don't like swearing on some of the welcome aboard." And boy, that changed a whole bunch of things in my life, because cruises are booked a year and a half in advance, and in this business, a year and a half of work ahead was stability, and I had a mortgage, and it was a pretty easy decision for me to make. So So that's how that conversation kind of went, and it worked out for me.
Being able to leave politics out of the act seems to be very difficult for a lot of people nowadays. You've got the three cable news networks, which usually finish in the top 10 of cable news. Newspapers, everything. It's in front of people, 24/7, internet, radio. Why was that decision made?
Oh, well, that's kind of easy for me in that there's so much out there, and if people want, they can certainly find it, so they definitely don't need to come see my show to get their fill of, not just the information, but the comedy on it. You turn on the late night shows, and they're full of politics, and what I found in my stage stuff and the live shows, if you do a political joke that pulls on one side or the other, it's kind of divisive, and there's no more forgiveness in this kind of climate, or for the past couple of years, where if you pick a side, you better stand way far on that side, because the people that hear that you're even a little bit on that side already have judged against you. So while I do have some political material, it's more about politics in general, and not politics compared to what whether you're blue or you're red. I kind of just kind of make light of the Will Rogers type idea of Congress being generally not friendly to everybody at all times, and I kind of make fun of the game of politics as opposed to the politicians or the sides, because boy, we've been having arguments about politics for 1,000 years. And if people want that kind of comedy, they can watch it every single night on, as you say, NBC, CBS, and ABC. It's pretty easy, not to mention all the cable shows. So I just tried to do something a little different, and I do have a couple political jokes. They just don't pick sides. They're just about politics in general. I think the one I'm not doing is you got to be pretty brave to run for politics, because you are that for the rest of your life. We know mayors that haven't been mayors for 20 years that are still called mayors, and presidents that they call presidents for 1,000 years. And I'm glad that stopped at mayor. That's probably as low as it gets. Otherwise, I'd be known as sophomore class treasurer Steve Bruner for the rest of my life. So, those are the kind of pieces that I just kind of point out what politicians do and all that stuff. So,
you know, it wasn't always that way, though. You know, prior to 2016, really, and maybe even, we'll say the last 20 years, you used to be able to tell a joke about a politician, and maybe it didn't even have anything to do with their politics. People used to tell Ted Kennedy jokes about weight.
Sure.
People used to tell Ronald Reagan jokes about taking naps in the afternoon. But it didn't mean that you hated them. It didn't mean that you were of the other political party. But now...
Yeah, it wasn't as filled with vitriol. You're absolutely right. I cut you off.
No. What do you think happened to us?
Boy, I think that's going to take a bigger brain than I've got to figure it out. Boy, we went down a slippery slope for a long period of time, and it just got... You know, I kind of think that maybe it's a pendulum that swings, and we just happen to be in one side where it swings really hard, because obviously there have been times in politics, not just in the United States but in the world, but I'm talking about the United States, where things were, you know, pretty harshly divided in a big, terrible way. So I'm kind of thinking maybe we're in that realm of things are difficult, and then they'll get sane, and then they'll go insane the other direction. Who knows? I mean, I remember the Victorian... I don't remember the Victorian times, but I remember reading about the Victorian times where people were pretty stodgy, and we had prohibition, where people were pro and con alcohol. We've had, you know... We've gone through some times. We've survived some times. This is one of those times where I just go, all right, just keep your head down and move forward, and do what you do, and try not to hurt anybody when you're doing it. Try to get if everybody's laughing, I'm pretty sure that the comedian's winning. So that's how I kind of see it. And if somebody's feelings are always going to get hurt in something, because now we're trying to find Now it's a game to try to have your feelings hurt and have your voice reached. And so it's kind of, I think, a little more difficult to be a comedian, but nobody put a gun to my head and said, you're going to be a comedian. This was a lucky choice that I got to make and have made a fine living with it, with places I get to go to a beautiful Palace Theater in Marion. I feel very fortunate, and my material's taking me there, maybe a little bit of my attitude, and I'm trying to get through with it. I like to lighten and not necessarily enlighten. So if you're coming for a political attitude or something, this may not be your show, but if you're just coming for a little vacation, I'd like to help you have a good time with it.
Do want to remind everybody, we're chatting this hour with Steve Bruner. He will be at the Marion Palace Theater on Saturday, August 27th. Hey, I got it right that time.
Yes, look at you.
Two points for me. 7:30 p.m. Tickets are available, 740-387-3425. Steve, when it does come to content, what type of things do you talk about in a Steve Bruner show?
Well, a big long period. I think for this show, I've got a nice big marriage hunk. I did something on dry bar comedy that seemed to spread a little bit about the difference between my wife and I, me being born and raised in California and her being born and raised in Tennessee, kind of a comparison, contrast, and not your usual people from the South versus people on the West Coast. It's kind of our personal story that caught on a little bit. I've added to that. That's kind of a nice hunk. It's a pretty happy marriage, which is a nice thing to write about, especially since I've been home so much during COVID. I'm happy to say that we still like each other and talk to each other, because I was gone on the road quite a bit during the first 10 years of our marriage, and I've been writing material that seems to be working on that angle. So that's part of it. Part of it's just some observations about traveling around after things have opened up, and boy, it sounds pretty banal when I just say it like that, but there's nothing too racy about what I do. It's just somebody living life that picks up a couple funny things with a couple nice twists and embarrassing moments that I get to spread and share that aren't too bad, that I think everybody else might have been through as well, and that's kind of what it's about.
You know, Steve, in a world of everybody has a cell phone, everybody can record anything. Shows are put up online. I heard Jay Leno say one time recently that he does not do comedy specials that are televised, because once the material is out there, he can't take that on the road anymore, because once people have heard a joke, it's not funny the second time. Do you find that to be true?
I think that some jokes are like that. And then other routines, maybe a joke when you've heard a joke, and I can't speak for Jay. He seemed to have done okay not doing his comedy specials. So that kid might make it, I guess, is what I'd like to say. But I write every day, and I write with a couple other people, other comics that are workshopping their material. So I've got new stuff. Boy, if I was doing all the old stuff all the time, I can't wait to get some of the new jokes out to a nice new crowd. And I can see his point that some things need to be retired. People like George Carlin, I recall, did 17 specials, so he continued to write new material. And maybe it's like seeing somebody do a magic trick. You want to see, wow, I still don't know how he did that. Or hearing a great story that somebody tells, you don't mind hearing it again, because there's something about live performance that is different. But an old joke, I've heard this one. Well, I don't think they've heard these, because I wrote them and they're about me. And if they did see some things on a couple of the specials that I've done, I've definitely added material, taken away some stuff, and if there's a one little echo of a piece or something like that, like the thing that's been most viewed on YouTube is called Wife Hunting, and I've added to it to a significant extent that I hope makes it even funnier than what you've seen. So I don't know if there's some familiarity. I think at some point, 10 years from now, people are like, oh, I got to see, you know, somebody do this, that, or the other joke. And I don't, seeing somebody do a live music performance that you've heard, Stairway to Heaven, I think I'd like to hear that or hear the Rolling Stones start me up. I'm not tired of it. So I don't know if it's like music or if it's like an old joke. It's somewhere in between, maybe. Boy, I'm getting kind of profound with you, Scott. Sorry about
hey,
that.
This is very good. Well, it's you know, all stage performances.
I should wake up early more often. Good Lord.
All stage performances are interesting in a way because they're different in a lot of ways and similar in a lot of ways. If a music performer gets up, they, you know, they have music with them. It's the same lyrics. They know what they're singing. If it's a play or a musical, again, they're playing somebody else. They know what they're doing. The lines are in front of them. A comedian, especially a stand-up comedian, is there with a microphone and themselves, and they've got to go. How much confidence do you have to do that?
Oh, boy, I hope none. I have no, I mean, here's how I see it. I always think it's like a dialogue that I'm talking and the audience is laughing. And, you know, that's what they interject. And so it's kind of a team effort. I do know when music plays and there's no audience, they can call it practice. When a comedian has no audience, it's tragic. So I'm hoping some people show, but every audience is different. You kind of got a feel to it. Everybody's either together or they're apart. You got to kind of make them as a team to where, you know, when I stop talking, they start laughing. That's always a help. I think probably every art form or science to every art form that there is kind of, I walk into every audience, I guess, a little confident that the material's worked before, but not so overconfident that, hey, I need to connect with these people so that they know from what perspective I am talking from, and hopefully, yeah, I think it's about connection. I think that's what I would say. And so I'm trying to connect early on to give them confidence that I am funny, and then they kind of go with you a little bit. They're willing to take the walk down the comedy road. So that's how I do it. But do I have confidence? I think what I'm saying is funny. It sometimes makes me laugh. So I'm hoping other people catch on.
Is there a joke that will work in California that will not work in Arizona, that will not work in Pittsburgh?
I think that's probably true, that there are differences in areas of material, and I think that's kind of complicated to sometimes weed out as to what is the flavor of the month in one place that is the poison of the month in the other. We were talking about politics earlier. Obviously, if you go to, I think California is considered a much bluer state than some others, a much more on the side of the liberal, and that's kind of where I just, you know, stick out. Although people do judge you from where you, where your airplane leaves the ground from, sometimes, and so you got to kind of go, hey, I'm just a regular people, not because of where I live, you know. And New York, I think, has a different attitude than parts of it. I don't know the Ohio attitude. I've been there a number of times. I did the Improv in Cincinnati, and I've been to Columbus a number of times, and I didn't find my material stopped working because I crossed one of the state lines. So I'm reasonably assured on that level. But yeah, I think people think different things and people are offended by different things, but we're all trying to get up every morning to figure out how to make it to the end of the day with as few scrapes as possible. And I guess some people look for scrapes. I'm not one of them. But I'm gonna dance with who brung me. And hopefully it'll work out.
41 minutes past here, past the hour here this morning, chatting with Steve Bruner, who will be at the Marion Palace Theater Saturday, August 27th, 7:30 p.m. If you're interested in tickets, the telephone number 740-387-3425. There are still tickets available for this great show. Steve, if I tell a joke with a group of friends, it might get a laugh. If I get up on stage and try to tell that exact same joke, that's not going to work. It doesn't make me a comedian. What's the difference?
Well, I went to high school. I guess I could probably best illuminate that idea with an example. I went to high school with a lot of funny people. I hung out with a lot of funny people. The difference that I see is I'm funny to strangers. And I'm not sure what the twist is personally, but I know when you're in a group where they know you and they know your perspective and they know where you're coming from and kind of where you're going to because of who they know you to be, that it's a little easier to get your sense of humor across. And when they're strangers and they're like, hey, we don't know this guy, what's he saying? I do know I kind of have a knack when I'm in an elevator type thing of saying the right thing to a bunch of strangers. Maybe it's because of my look. Maybe it's because of my feel. Maybe it's because of my, I don't know, some people believe there's an aura. I don't know if it's a vibe or whatever, but I sometimes can just be funny among strangers without meaning to be because it's the way I'm built. It's the way I am. So I don't know about others, but I do know that there's funny people to their friends and family, and there's funny people that can be there for their friends and family and strangers. And fortunately, I'm of the latter kind that can open up the walk to my comedy a little wider than some other people. I sure hope I'm answering your questions because you got good ones.
No, you're doing great. It's a fascinating conversation. And you know, tell me about, because I think a lot of people are interested in this. Tell me about the crafting of a joke. Take me from how do ideas come to you, and how do you get them shaped to where you take them to the stage?
Well, my grandfather always said that I saw the world, in his expression, a bubble off plum. I'd see like just a little askew from the way everybody else did. I'd done it since I was a little kid, where I'd ask questions. I never thought of it that way quite. I just kind of looked at the world a little off. So I always carry around a notebook, and when I see something a little silly or a little something that I go, oh, that's kind of curious, why do they have that? I write it down, and when I get a moment, I kind of flesh it out, and there is some aspect of science to it. I think some better jokes are written with a punch word at the end so that it's kind of like the snap of a whip, where the little tiniest part of the whole whip makes the biggest noise because it breaks the sound barrier. Same idea of you keep kind of a secret to the joke, you set it up, and you give everybody an idea, and then you keep the secret little twist until the very, very end, and that sort of, like the whip, sort of makes people awake with the crack, and then they laugh at the end. So there is a bit of science to some parts of the joke, and the ideas. I'm lucky that I see the world in a certain way that other people have found amusing, and I find it amusing too. I love finding something a little goofy in the world that other people, you know, when the police officer pulled me over in Tennessee and said, I said, well, how fast did you think I was going? And he said, well, I had you clocked at 46 miles an hour. And I went, the speed limit was, wasn't it like 45 or something? Like, he goes, yeah, here in Tennessee, it's a speed limit, not a speed suggestion. And I was just like, oh my goodness, there's, I get it. You can't vacillate 1 mile an hour over. All right, well, thanks for educating me. I appreciate it. And those kind of things just pop in every now and again. I hear somebody say something and hear somebody do something and then try to put it in a form that other people can access it easily. And I hope that helps.
How much embellishment, if it's a true life story, how much do you have to embellish it to make it suitable and funny for an audience?
Well, I think the least embellishment there is for a core thought, if it's funny at the core, then you can dress it up a little bit in some fancy, shiny clothes, and it's even nicer. But if you can just walk in with jeans and a t-shirt on your with your joke dressed up in jeans and a t-shirt, and it's funny, then you know you've got it's gold. You know, I mean, a nugget of gold is kind of nice and pretty all by itself. You don't really have to bedazzle it to make it look good. So the simpler the thought, sometimes the better, and then you can add the legs to it if you want to. Like if it starts out as a stick figure and you want to make it into a drawing, I think it depends on the joke. I don't think there's any one answer that works to every single. I have some one-liner jokes, and then I have some routines that are 7 minutes long, all to get to one point. And they both seem to work. So, and I do think you're kind of a mixed bag. You want a bunch of different tricks so that people don't get tired of seeing just cards, or they want a rope trick, or they want to see somebody disappear. Mike Price is probably not just going to juggle balls for 25 minutes. He's gonna have a couple other neat things that he throws up in the air that we can't do that make it very watchable. So. I try to vary it, and some will have a big bunch of wardrobe wearing stuff that you're like, oh my goodness, he took us all that way for that. Another one, it's a 15 second statement, and so that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to vary it.
We have about 10 minutes left here this morning chatting with comedian Steve Bruner, again at the Marion Palace Theater, Saturday night, August 27th, about 48 hours from now, 7:30 p.m. Tickets are still available, 740-387-3425. Steve, when you get up on stage, and the dreaded thing for all comedians, the joke doesn't work. It doesn't get any laughs. What is that like?
Well, it's not as good as when the joke does work, I'll tell you what. But, I went, there are a couple pieces that I wrote for this show, because it's one of the bigger shows that I've gotten this month, for sure. And I went to what we call a showcase or an open mic, where there's a small audience, and you go, boy, I really thought, you get some laughs before you try something out, and then all of a sudden you try something out, and the audience is like, what the heck are you saying? What language was that? What is that like? Well, it's sometimes back to the drawing board, and you got to figure out, well, what did I think was funny about that they completely lost out on? You definitely want to try to get those clunkers out prior, but, sometimes if you don't have a big enough pause, people don't even know that you did a joke, and you can move right on to the next thing. They think, boy, it's just part of the setup of the last joke. And not every joke is going to get applause and have people stand up, so there's different levels. But when a joke doesn't work, pretty much everybody knows it in the audience, I think. And it's not pleasant. It's not like hitting a bad note on the saxophone. Wow, I thought that was funny in front of the mirror today, but you people definitely told me it wasn't. So I don't know how to describe that feeling, but it's not what I'm getting up on stage for, that's for sure.
Do you ever really know when you're writing a joke if it's going to be funny in front of an audience?
A few times I have an idea I'm better now than when I was starting. I have a better filter, a better funnel, a better idea of, I believe this is going to work because of my experience in figuring out how to communicate to other humans. So I have a better percentage, but it ain't 100%. So I can sit down And when I come across a joke and I write a lot and a lot doesn't make it to the stage because I go, that's a funny idea, but not a funny joke. There is a big difference between the two. And sometimes I come up with a funny idea that I can make into a funny joke, and I think I've narrowed my percentage down to a better failure rate than I had when I started. When I started, boy, you just throw spaghetti at the wall, and I didn't know what was working and what wasn't, and what people thought for me. And now I kind of know who I am. I'm at an age where I've been through some stuff and had a little bit of life. I've been on stage enough to where I kind of have a better idea of what people see when they look at me, and what material can come out of my mouth that they can access and laugh at. And I'm better at what I do now. So there, Marion, you're getting me at other than the 2 years of COVID, I'm kind of getting to the top of my game. It's a fun time to be me, and I know it because I'm me. So
there you go. No better time to be you than now.
That's right. Well, and hopefully Saturday night.
And hopefully Saturday night for that period of time. When you have a funny idea and you've written a new joke and you get up there and let's say it doesn't work, do you give up on the joke or do you try to fine tune it and try it again?
Well, I want to be one of those kind of guys that's lazy with my ideas. When I get an idea, I want to grab onto it and write it for all it's worth. So I spend a lot of time on something that I think is worthy of the time I spend. And I'm very disappointed when I spend a good period of time on a joke and it continually doesn't work. It's kind of a labor of love, but at some point you got to go, wow, that joke just, for some reason, that doesn't work coming out of my mouth, but I give it a good long... Now and again, you have just an idea, and you throw it out there, and you're like, maybe that I'm not as invested in, but I have a piece I'm not doing in Marion. I've done it probably about 15 times trying to get it ready for this show, and it just has not... I can't save it after it doesn't work. I can't fix it before... I've tried it a dozen different ways. A couple of my friends think it's funny, but boy, I have, there's one piece in particular that I'm like, no, I got to leave it out. I can't fix it. And it's a pretty big speed bump in the show. And I'm like, God darn it. Shucks. I can't figure out how to do it right. And, it's not going to make it. I don't know if I've given up on it permanently, but it's definitely taking a vacation from this month's shows.
You know, stand-up comedy, again, is interesting when it comes to putting it in a category with music as well as stage performance of a play. Yeah. Because, again, if they're not having a good day, they don't feel well, maybe there was a death in the family, something happened, those people, again, are doing the same part, same words every night. Yeah. They can still do that. Yeah. A comedian, if there's been a death in your family, if there has been a tragedy going, if you're having a fight with the wife, how do you get up there and still do it?
Well, the show must go on. Unfortunately, I don't fight too much with my wife. People do die, and bad things happen. You get a flat tire. Sometimes you can have your own vacation up on stage, and you can deal with life. It's off stage and deal with the audience when you're on stage. So maybe it's a, I can't think of an example. I know I've had the flu before where I was sick as a dog until I hit the stage and all of a sudden, something happens where you get through it. And as soon as I came off stage, I'm like, I need to go to the minute clinic or whatever. Cause I don't feel well. So I don't know. There's something about the stage and the lights and the laughter and the audience that tends to salve all wounds. And I don't know how other people do it. I just know this is my living, and sometimes you got to put you got to put tomorrow in its place and take care of right now. And that didn't sound very funny, but that's the truth. I get to sometimes look forward to that hour up on stage more than just about any other part of my life. And my wife is in a very good mood, so I'm looking forward to Ohio. Nobody's mad at me. So life is pretty good right now.
56 minutes past the hour here. Steve Bruner, the guest comedian at the Marion Palace Theater, Saturday, August 27th, 7:30 p.m. Again, telephone number for tickets, 740-387-3425. Steve, if you could write the story for the rest of your career, where do you want to be? In 2022, is it Netflix special? Is it still a sitcom? Is it a YouTube series? What is the goal for a stand-up comedian in 2022?
It's a lovely question, Scott, for me. I don't know. Every stand-up comedian probably wants something different. My life's been golden. I live back in my hometown where I grew up, and the only problem with that is when I go out to buy cream in the morning, I got to comb my hair because I'm going to see somebody I went to third grade with. And people know that I'm a comedian, and some people say, you know, hey, you did, how do you like comedy? You know, it's not like you're famous. And my wife was with me one time and she goes, oh no, he's not famous. He's just real successful. And I'm one of the luckiest people I've ever met in my entire life. I've got to do 30 plus years of making people laugh all over the world on cruises. I went to 72 countries. I've been to 49 states. I'm missing South Dakota. I'm going to get South Dakota before I'm done. I'm telling you, South Dakota. And I don't know what is more. Of course, I'd like a little bit more fame. It'd give a little more voice to my comedy. More people would hear it. But if this is all I ever get, I'm a pretty happy guy. So sure, if Netflix wants to film a special, that's great, and I would just like to be able to write more comedy and perform more in my life and keep coming up with funny stuff that amuses me and amuses my wife and amuses my friends and my family and also a bunch of strangers. So I don't have a big bucket list yet. I'm really fortunate. Maybe I should want more. I'm not really sure. But yeah, I'd like to be on Sirius Radio. I'd like to have a little more comedy out there that people go, oh, did you see that thing that Steve Bruner did? Sure, I'd like that. If it happens, fantastic. If it doesn't, I'm probably going to be okay. So I'm hoping that's not too egotistical nor too small of an ego in an answer.
Steve, you are just a happy person, and that's a great thing. It's interesting, though, because, you know, over the years, one of our first guests, when I first got into radio years ago, we had Phyllis Diller on many times, probably 30 times. But Phyllis, when you would interview her, she was a very serious, analytical person. Comedy is what she did. But she was not the fright wig. She was not the glove. She was not that in an interview. She could talk about she was a serious person. Not that she was unhappy. She was just serious.
No.
Joan Rivers, the same way when we had her on. Very serious person. You just seem like a happy person.
Well, I did have the good fortune to meet Phyllis Diller, and I have her paperweight on my desk, and I was holding it yesterday. She was delightful to me. When I met her, she saw a late night show.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 LP Marion, Ohio, the place to talk. From legendary comedian Abe Vigoda.
Can you still recite Shakespeare?
Yes, methinks I am a prophet new inspired, and thus aspiring to foretell of him. His rash hair, blaze of riot cannot last. the violent
when
fire
in the court, and $100 for hotel money for those days,
my
kind of
sanity.
And I love comedy. Know how to do. If Armageddon comes, I'm lost. So I'm pretty happy that I found a something I can make a living at that makes other people have a little aspect of joy, and I can pay my bills with it, and I still make my wife laugh and my daughter sometimes, and life's pretty good. So you're catching me, Scott, at a nice time. I'm not sure if we had this conversation 15 years ago, I would have been a little, oh, well, here's what you think. Nope, I'm loving writing silly jokes that I think other people laugh at and making a living at it. So you're catching me at a good time to be Steve Bruner. Maybe that's it.
You know, a favorite quick Phyllis Diller joke was, she said, yeah. I love this, and I told her this all the time, and I just thought it was hilarious because it was so quick and so easy. She said her mythical husband was Fang, for people who don't remember, and the joke was, they asked Fang to be a Jehovah's Witness, and he said he couldn't because he didn't see the accident. And I just thought, what a quick and easy joke
so
that is.
So short and quick and a perfect example of the last word is the reveals the joke. So yeah, it has a hard consonant at the end. Oh boy, she was sure good. She was sure good. There's so many good comics out now, and I certainly appreciate Marion and everybody at the Palace Theater. My buddy Kirk, who runs it, advocating comedy. I hope they come out. I hope it's successful, and I hope they do it a bunch because. It is it's a fun thing to do, and that's a pretty. As a matter of fact, I'm taping on Saturday just to have a fantastic tape at a beautiful venue, and so I hope people come and I hope they laugh and have a really good time, and that I get to capture it on tape.
It's going to be something to see. You won't want to miss it. A clean show. Comedy, you will definitely laugh from a happy guy, Steve Bruner, August 27th, 7:30 p.m., Marion Palace Theater, right here in our hometown. Again, there are still tickets available for this show, 740-387-3425. Something tells me you won't want to miss this. Steve, it's been a pleasure this morning. Thanks for getting up before the crack of dawn, and best of luck.
Thanks so very much. I appreciate you letting me advertise. It's a great question. Hope to see you on Saturday and everybody else listening. Take good care.
Thank you, Steve. Bye-bye.
Cheers, bye.
Steve Bruner will be back in 15 minutes.
And we go on and on. This royal throne of kings. This scepter.